Midtown, Alaska. This is your host for this edition, Peter Dunlap Scholl. Today we're talking about Alaska's financial incentives, for filmmakers. With me in the studio are Dave Worrell, manager of the Alaska Film Office, and award-winning film director and executive of Affinity Films, Mary Katsky. We want to hear from you as well, so call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or statewide, it's toll-free at 1-888, that's 1 with 3 8s, 353-5752. Or if you prefer, you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Dave, welcome, and thank you for coming in, and Mary, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
I have, like to start with Dave, I guess, and as I understand it, we have about $50 million left, I think, right now in incentives.
That's correct. The legislation that created the program allocated $100 million for incentives in the form of tax credits over 5 years. So far, if all the productions meet their anticipated budgets and actually get produced, we've got about $57 million that has been spoken for. Mm-hmm. But I expect about 7 or 8 million of that to fall off the list because productions didn't get made.
And so this is a somewhat complex process, I assume, figuring out how the incentive works. Could you outline that for us in a way that's simpler? Is that impossible to do?
Well, I will do my best.
Okay, basically,
the way the program works is it provides a tax credit to filmmakers based on what they spend in Alaska. Mm-hmm. The base rate that I encourage producers to look at is 30%. So 30% of what they spend on the ground in Alaska is eligible for a tax credit. There are additional bump ups for Alaska Hire. There's an additional 10%. So all the Alaskans you hire, you're getting 40% back on what you pay them. There is additional 2% for filming in a rural area, an additional 2% for filming in the off-season, which is October through March. So portions of a production could get up to 44% of their ground spend in Alaska back in the form of a tax credit. Mm-hmm. Now, overall, most productions are coming in at about a little over 30%. It's about a third of what a production spends on the ground in Alaska. They're going to be able to get back in the form of a tax credit. Where it gets complicated is a tax credit.
It's not getting complicated, please. So stay with us.
It is a tax credit. Most productions will not have a tax liability in Alaska. Mm-hmm. So it is, by legislation, a transferable tax credit. So the producer will sell that tax credit to an Alaska business that has a tax liability. So let's just give an easy round number example. Let's say a production comes up to Alaska and spends $3 million on the ground. They're going to be eligible for roughly $1 million in the form of a tax credit. Mm. They will sell that tax credit to Joe's Bait Shop for roughly $800,000 to $900,000. And that's how they actually recoup that 30% of what they spend in Alaska.
Okay, I hope you're following that out there in Radio Land. And if you are following it, anyone to comment about that, that would be at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or statewide toll free, that's 1-888-353-5752. So, Dave, why do we have to do this? Are there other states that are doing this? Obviously, there must be. Why do we have to give people money to come here?
Absolutely. I think we can blame the Canadians. They started the whole incentive game.
Blame Canada.
Absolutely. They started providing incentives to draw productions into Canada from particularly California. Uh-huh. Vancouver was particularly successful at that and has become Hollywood North. That was about 15 years ago, maybe 20, when it really started getting underway. In that time span, most other jurisdictions have come up with some sort of incentive. At 30%, mm-hmm. Alaska is kind of right in the mix. Mm-hmm. At 44% maximum rate, that would be one of the highest in the country. But remember, only portions of a production can actually get up to that rate.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'll do when I figure out my budget for my movie, which I'm going to have to figure out pretty soon, I think. Mary, you've had to figure that out in the past yourself. Have you been able to use this program?
Yes, we have. And I'm happy to say it went very smoothly. Mm-hmm. And we're already queued up for our next major production in terms of using the tax incentive program. I think that what it's done for us, since we're now getting over half our funding from outside the state, is it has refocused us on filming everything here, whereas we used to travel around the country and get interviews in California and New York and so forth. Now we will bring those people to Alaska, for instance, to do the interview. The first production we ran through the program involved a documentary about breast cancer, and we could have filmed that in Hawaii easily because the context wasn't so critical to the information. But once the incentive program was alive and well and working, it was very much in our favor to do it here. And what we're able to do then is to take that money that comes back and reinvest in our next production, which makes us healthier and growing much stronger now, too.
So does that mean you talk to more Alaskans about breast cancer than you would have otherwise, you think? Or
no, we just brought them all here.
Okay, that's interesting. Have you seen changes in the film industry locally, aside from that, the way that the incentive program has played out? Has it changed it in other ways?
I would say it's changing it quite a bit. It's like a gold rush in that there are front runners. There are people who are greedy and looking to make a lot of money. There are people who are aligning and not aligning, and there's going to be a lot of fallout from that. Whenever there's higher stakes, that's going to happen. And then there's the core, people who have been here for 20 or 30 or 40 years, who see the big picture in the long term and have that in mind. So that's what I can say about that.
There's been hurt feelings, I guess, perhaps, or
I think that's inevitable.
Yep.
Whenever there's big stakes, that's one of the reasons I don't work in L.A. is I didn't really like that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Now that atmosphere's here.
They were sort of paying them to come up here. It's funny because if you look at the movies that they make about Los Angeles in Hollywood, it's like The Player by Robert Altman, I think, is one, and the Coen Brothers is one about a scriptwriter, I think. Mm-hmm. There's been everything back to since the star was born. It's not like these people are the worst, most toxic people in the world. Why do we want to bring them up here? I just don't understand that. But I guess it's because perhaps they'll come up here and get eaten by a polar bear or something like that. That'd be one of the good things that would happen.
Well, really, you know, what this program is all about, why the legislature came up with it, is there have been over the years a lot of films that have been set in Alaska,
that's very annoying.
And filmed elsewhere.
Yep.
You know, whether we're looking at feature films or television programs, I think really the last straw that actually got this program passed was The Proposal, starring Sandra Bullock. Here's a film that was set in Sitka, one of the most amazing places on the planet, and yet it was filmed in Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Yep.
With some second unit shooting here in Alaska. And I think that was really what made the legislature sit up and say, wait a minute, what can we do to bring some of that production that's set in Alaska actually to Alaska instead of filming in British Columbia or Washington State or elsewhere?
I'm just going to say
we have a lot of natural barriers up here, such as it costs money to come and go from Alaska, costs more money to work up here. We have less crew. We have less equipment. So now we're able to begin to build that more solidly and mitigate those circumstances to make us a real viable player.
So, Dave, I want to loop back a little bit to what you said about bringing these people here to shoot. Why would we want to bring, say, the film industry and not maybe such as high tech or something like that?
Well, this is just one small part of the state's effort to diversify the economy. It's one thing that the Office of Economic Development, the Division of Economic Development now, is working on. This just happens to be the tool that I was given to encourage development of Alaska's economy. There are other programs that are working in other areas. But what's really exciting about this is it is working as intended. You know, when this program first started about 3 years ago, in that year we had six productions pre-qualify for the program. The next year we had 25. The following year we had 33. This year, so far, we've got 9 productions, and I'm talking fiscal years, which is state government ease. But nonetheless, we are seeing a steady growth in the number of productions that are applying for the program. And they're not all big Hollywood features. Mary was an early adopter and really took advantage of the program. And we hope to see more Alaskans doing that. We've seen a lot of nonfiction television take advantage of the program. We've seen a few documentaries apply for the program. We've seen feature films of all sizes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a very small independent feature film is a very different animal than a big studio film. So, you know, it runs the gamut. And I think it really does show Alaska in a good light, which is good for our tourism businesses. So it's larger than just the film industry itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that I accidentally got my picture taken with John Voight, so there's that. It was like a drive-by photo taking. It was like I was standing in this lobby of this building, and this person says, "There's John Voight. Would you mind stepping in this picture here?" And so we're just all standing there. We don't know him. He doesn't know us. And suddenly we're in picture together. I have no copy of it, but it's just like, what the heck? I don't think that would have happened 6 years ago. I don't think so, but we'll see, I guess.
Exactly.
If you have more of those exciting moments, it's like we talked earlier with Mary, it's like whale watching. These people suddenly appear out of nowhere, and you say, oh, my God, bring over here and check it out. So we were talking with Mary Katsky and Dave Worrell about the Alaska Film Office and its incentives to people to come up here and shoot. If you would like to talk to either of these people or tell us about your experience with the Alaska film industry, go ahead and give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-5752 statewide. And our email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So the way we're going to be able to measure the success of the program is not in the number of gaffers or something that we train, it's the number of productions that we bring. Is that the way that you're measuring success?
Well, I think there are multiple ways to measure success. Certainly mm-hmm. jobs are important. And one of the things we're doing is trying to build that human capital to support the industry. We're definitely working with the Department of Labor. The legislature actually just appropriated money in this last legislative session to create a workforce development project specifically aimed at the film industry. So that's exciting. So we're looking at jobs. We're looking at money coming into the state. You know, the film industry, when a big production comes in, that's new money coming into the state. And it also rolls around the state in unexpected ways. The big movie that was here last fall, Everybody Loves Whales, which has since been retitled. It's now Big Miracle. Mm-hmm. It's expected to premiere in February. But, you know, they hired people, an upholsterer, to reupholster a restaurant so that it would have the appropriate 80s look. They hired an engineering company to survey their set so that they could match their electronic graphics into the live action footage. So, you know, it's much wider impact than most people see on the surface. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of ironic that they would have to reupholster this area when they were going to probably shoot this outside without the incentives. They would find that it was necessary to they have fake Alaska, but they can't have fake upholstery is what we got going there.
Well, a director will often want things a very special way. There was mm-hmm. one in that same film. They found a perfect hair salon, mm-hmm. and it was very 80s and, mm-hmm. and looked perfect for the show. And they negotiated with the owner and got all the arrangements to film there in a couple weeks. And the owner went out and cleaned everything up and shined it. And they couldn't film there anymore.
Right.
They had to go out and find a different spot because they really wanted that look.
They have a drop by real quick, not call for an appointment sort of thing for their filming, which is It's one of the things that is interesting about the movies, they are illusions in this. The way you sustain that illusion is by knowing what people expect, I think, more than what they're actually going to see.
Mm-hmm.
So,
smoke and mirrors.
Yep. It's all the stuff that dreams are made of, I think, is the line. So your take is that we're achieving the vision of the program as it was envisioned.
I really think so. So far, since the inception of the program, we have approved 27 tax credits for just about $9.4 million. That represents a ground spend of about $29 million. And once again, that is just the tip of the iceberg, because all the people that came to Alaska spent money on gifts and other things. It's going to show Alaska on the big screen, which can draw more tourists. So the impact is much wider than strictly that $29 million ground spend.
So, Mary, if you're making a movie, how many people just to give? I know that when I sit in the credit crawl after it's done, there's like this amazing thing that goes on for hours and hours while people's...
that no one reads.
Yeah, that nobody reads. It's
unless you're in
a real movie-aholic, I guess. But I suppose it depends on what you're trying to do as a producer. But what would you say would be the average crew size, or could you say there's an average crew size?
Well, for us or for a feature film, I mean, the range is 10 to 400 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people we got to train, I guess, if we're going to make the industry happen here, which seems like sort of a
well, the good
step.
News is there's a wave of young people blossoming in the community because of the film opportunities. It's very exciting to see.
It really is. And, you know, that I think is one of the side benefits of this. As we bring in Hollywood productions, we're building the infrastructure, the physical infrastructure. We're getting people interested in building sound stages. We're starting to see equipment being brought into Alaska and kept in Alaska, whether it be specialized lighting equipment, cameras, those kind of things. And what'll happen is that infrastructure will exist for local filmmakers to use in between the big productions. And so, you know, just recently we had the Never Sets Festival, which was really exciting. Short films produced by Alaskans statewide. And really, I think it was a good success. I think we'll see more of that as the talent pool expands and as people get some experience on professional sets and then move forward into their own projects. And that's really my personal goal, is to see Alaskan stories told by Alaskans. And this really will help us towards that.
So when this comes forward again to be renewed to the legislature, what would you say to them as far as how the program is done and what it's achieved? You'll probably tell them what you just told us about all this stuff that's done. What sort of objections did they have when they were initially starting the program up?
Well, I was not a part of that process. But, you know, I think some of the concerns are, should the state be subsidizing any particular industry?
It's a perennial question in Alaska, yes.
Exactly. It's a perennial question. It's one that we've answered for some industries positively and other industries negatively. So, you know, that is really a question that the legislature has to struggle over. Mm. I will say that there is legislation pending to extend this program for an additional 10 years. That legislation passed the Alaska Senate unanimously, which doesn't happen very often, that you have kind of that broad bipartisan support. The bill is currently sitting in the House before the House Finance Committee, I think, is its next appearance. And while, you know, I won't predict what the legislature is going to do, I think there's reason for cautious optimism that this program will be continued into the future.
And I guess you said you do not know what they were objecting to in the past or anything about beyond the usual, should we subsidize this person or that person? And that is, do we want to subsidize Fox or do we want to subsidize CBS, I guess. It's not the sort of thing that we usually debate in the legislature here. But I wonder, will the availability of cheaper, lighter, better equipment, will that enable less filmmakers, you think, to do more and with less money? It seems now like that could be a pretty good movie with my Macintosh if I want. Is that going to change the need for the program, or is that going to go away?
Well, I think Mary might have a better answer than me on this, but I will say that the technology is changing. Mm-hmm. But really, the lion's share of the cost of a film is actually personnel.
The people, yes.
And quality personnel and getting a good script.
A good story.
Those things are not inexpensive. Mm-hmm. But Mary, in terms of your vision, are you being able to execute better?
I've been through probably 10 or 12 different formats in my 30 mm-hmm. years of film producing. And what I see is that more and more people are, the equipment's more and more accessible. However, quantity does not mean quality. And people are often asking us, you know, what kind of camera did you use? And I said, the same kind as you. It's just mm-hmm. that we had good gaffers and, mm-hmm. you know, we had a real sound person. You can hear the tracks nice and clear. That still comes down to highly trained, dedicated mm-hmm. professionals. But what's more significant is the distribution landscape. We are in a critical point on that front, in that we've now got the Netflix and instant download and flat rates to watch your shows. And it's getting harder and harder to recoup a real investment. So this tips it more toward the star system, which is mm-hmm. where the budgets are very, very top heavy. A handful of people at the top mm-hmm. make an awful lot of money, mm-hmm. and the people at the bottom are getting less and less, and mm-hmm. that's not right. Yeah. So that's another issue to take on when you're dealing with the film business.
That is interesting. That is a universal problem, it seems like. And it was, I remember in the 80s or early 90s, everybody was saying content is king, and that's not what's happening now. It's distribution is king, is what's happening. And it seems like you can have the greatest content you want, but finding somebody that will pay for it is one of the things that's very difficult to do.
Very difficult.
Well, that's, I guess that's up to artists to have to figure out how to tell their stories in spite of this, is what,
right.
what we have to do, but it's not a very
It is, and I think the global economic situation isn't helping. Mm-hmm. You know, a few years ago, there was
piracy, too.
Piracy, yeah. Absolutely, is a critical issue. But financing has become a real challenge for a lot of productions. Finding the money, getting venture capital to start a production, to pay those initial expenses, is a huge challenge for productions. Mm-hmm. And what I think we're seeing is a real kind of split in the industry, where you have your big, what is known in the industry as tentpole productions from the studios, your Spider-Man's, mm-hmm. your big ticket theatrical films, and then you're seeing just a huge explosion in the number of independent films. Mm-hmm. But those independent films are having to be fast and light and inexpensive. And so they are taking advantage of the technical changes, but they're also absolutely concerned with incentives and what is available to help make their production affordable to make. And talking with producers, they will rewrite a script to fit a location if the incentive works for that production. So the industry is changing, but it's been in constant state of change since the first motion picture.
Well, I remember that I think during the 30s, Hollywood was the big the dream factory where people would go to the movies to escape the ugly realities of their economic lives that they were facing at that time. It's like the time has sort of come around again in some ways.
Yes. So that's in times of recession, movie going goes up.
Oh, that's interesting. So, Mary, I think you've told me before that there's a certain point in the ecology of a film where too much money will mess it up for you. Is that? Can you explain about that a little bit?
Well, there are various tipping points. I mean, one of the things that's happened with the feature industry is that there's this concept called negative pickup deals where the big studio uses their name, but it's actually made by a small independent company that's exempt from all the labor considerations, the union considerations. There's no health insurance. They work overtime. They don't follow the same rules. And that's a problem. Yep. And so competing with that, that picture goes up against the one that did it all by the rules. And Netflix offers you the same flat fee to be able to streamline your movie. So back to your question again.
Well, the question was, is there a point where so much money comes in that you just...
So much money.
It distorts your...
I remember when John Sayles was up here, we had him up for a workshop, and he said that his tipping point was $8 million. Mm-hmm. He said after that, he didn't have as much control as he wanted, too many people, too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, that really stuck in my mind that somebody with his reputation, track record, mm-hmm. would say that there's a point where you lose why you're there, which is to tell a story with your vision.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that is sort of ironic because as we spend more and more on movies, they, in a sense, may have less and less to tell us in some ways. I think in some ways, because you're getting farther away from the story, the more you're paying for effects, for big names, the farther you're getting away from the story, which is the core of the film, I would think. But that's why I'm not a producer, I guess, in Hollywood, because... I haven't mastered that.
Depends on your demographic. I think tweeners go for the effects.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's just sort of old crankiness on my part. If that maybe isn't just a different way of telling stories. Maybe it's a different story that seems like it's been told an awful lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, there's no substitute for a powerful documentary, even if it's made for $50,000.
Yep. Well, I got to say, Alaska's got to be... great territory for that. There's going to be a ton of very good stories out there for us to be making it.
No shortage of stories here.
Yep. In fact, that's one of the things that I guess is luring one of the productions north, is the one on Robert Hansen now. That talking about making about the baker that was the nut who killed all those dancers in that awful way. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. If they would have filmed it maybe in Chicago, we would have been happier if they would have filmed it there because it's such a ugly story. But it's... are they working with the incentive office?
They are. I can't talk a whole lot about that production, Frozen Ground. They are in the process, as we speak, of scouting locations and ramping up production. Mm-hmm. They do anticipate shooting next month. You know, it is a fictionalized telling of a true story. You know, it is not a documentary. Just as Everybody Loves Whales was not a documentary about the whales trapped in the ice near Barrow. They're fictionalized storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. But I do believe that there are huge stories waiting to be told about Alaska's history, and they can be told in documentary format and also as fictional accounts. I think, you know, clearly the story of the original Serum Run has been a perennial. The building of some of the amazing engineering feats in Alaska, whether it be the White Pass Railroad. I think there's a documentary there, but there's also a fictionalized account of Soapy Smith that could be told.
Yep, I think you should get out there and write a script up for that. It'd be good. We got to go to a break here very soon. I would like to tell you that we're going to come back and talk with someone who's come north to break into the film industry. We'll have her after the break, which is coming up soon. This is Hometown Alaska with your host, Peter Dunlap Scholl.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Hello, and welcome back to Hometown Alaska. We are talking with Mary Katsky and Dave Worrell about Alaska's film bonus incentives program and the film industry here in Alaska. And we do have on the line a caller who has come north to work here in Alaska. This is Holly. Holly, could you tell us a little bit about what brought you up here?
Hi.
Hi.
Good to talk to you all.
Good to talk to you.
I actually just graduated college this spring, and while my friends were doing very standard, you know, finance and consulting jobs, I kind of wanted to do something a little different.
Bless you, Holly.
Sorry, what?
I said bless you. That's very good. The sort of thing that we like to hear.
There would be a perfect marriage of, you know, doing something adventurous as well as something that would be beneficial to my career in the long term, mm-hmm. which I want to do something in the film industry. So, I mean, hearing about this film incentives program in Alaska, it just made sense. I mean, there's no adventure like Alaska.
So that was the thing that you did know about that before you came here, that we were having the film incentives program? Was the sort of thing that brought you up?
It's probably one of the main things that brought me up.
Wow.
I definitely always wanted to come to Alaska, but it was kind of that extra last push to make sure that, you know, I wasn't just coming up here to gallivant around and go mm-hmm. hiking every day, but that I was actually going to gain something from it career-wise as well.
Well, that's what have you gained from it career-wise? Has it been a good move, do you think, so far?
I actually just started work 2 days ago, so on frozen ground. So far, I mean, I did get hired. So.
Yes. That's
congratulations.
So what did you do for them?
You.
Can you say what you'll be doing for them?
I am the director's assistant.
Oh, and that is a person that just supposed to, like, what the director needs, that you need, like, to go get coffee or, like, find a sled or something like that? You got to go do that? What?
Yeah, more or less. Just kind of help him out with whatever he needs.
Uh-huh. What? Sounds like it'd be a great way to make contacts, et cetera. That's been. And how did you connect up with the people that were hiring for that?
Mainly through contacts I made in the first month I was here. That was one of the things that was a little difficult about the whole process, was finding who to contact and who to talk to. Mm-hmm. I didn't find it to be very well publicized or any of that. It's kind of like I had to find a back door to go through. But mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of the industry at that, really helps to know.
There's a lot of rolling eyes in the studio right now.
Nodding.
Yeah. That's going on. So that's a good, promising start. I hope that goes well for you. And thank you very much for letting us in on that and how that's going for you.
Thank you. It was nice talking to y'all.
Yeah, good talking to you. So that's one of the stories I guess we're trying to make happen here, is there's a person that will come up and always wanted to see Alaska and it's come out here because they want to break in the film industry. Which is the last place I would have thought that a person would come to do that. I just can't imagine the person saying, well, I think if I go, maybe Ray Mala, the guy was in the first picture that started, I think, in Alaska, Eskimo, was Nanook mm-hmm. of the North, right? And that was with Ray Mala, who was mm-hmm. from the North Slope, I believe. Mm-hmm. But who else would have thought that this would be a place to start a career in pictures? I don't know. So... Oh, go ahead, Dave, you had something?
Well, I was just going to mention, you know, there are some resources available to folks who want to get involved in the industry. First of all, I'll mention the Alaska Film Office website, which is at film.alaska.gov. And I think you guys have a link on the Hometown Alaska page.
We do have.
Near the top of the page, there's information about how Alaska businesses can get involved by providing products and services to productions. Mm-hmm. There's public information on the productions that have pre-qualified for the program. And certainly, you can use that information as a resource. And then we also have a news page. And when a production issues a crew call or a casting call, mm-hmm. we'll always post that information there.
Okay, so bookmark that on your,
exactly.
your browser, you as hiring actors and people out there.
Exactly. And we have a free listing service that is available to Alaska residents. We have actually essentially three databases, one for people who want to work as crew members, one for businesses that mm-hmm. provide services, and that's everything from specialized equipment to hotels and lodging, and it's statewide. And then there's also a talent database. There's no charge for Alaskan residents to get a listing. The information is all available on the website, and there's contact information for the website. So give us a call if you think your business could participate. Another great thing is we are building an online location library so that filmmakers can see pictures and images of the different locations that are available in Alaska. Right now, we're up to about 350 different locations, but we're encouraging folks to work with us to add more locations. I'd love to have every log cabin in Alaska in our location library so that when a director is looking for a log cabin, Alaska is going to be the first place that comes up. So certainly that's another great option. All of those are available online. And once again, at film.alaska.gov, just go to the website. If you want to list your property as a location, go to the Find Alaska Locations page. If you want to work in film, go to the Find People and Services page.
And if you want to direct a film, go to that page as well.
Because absolutely.
That's what, you're going to have the resource there for your research. Well, I'm wondering, just for fun, if you guys can name your top three favorite Alaska films, what they are. Do you have three, Mary, are your favorite films, or have you ever thought about that?
I haven't thought about that.
Well, think about it now. And Dave, you think about
Nanook it. Nanook of the North.
That's one. Okay. I was going to say that one as well.
There's so many films that have been set in Alaska, yep. But the film, I think, that really presents a unique vision of Alaska is The Bus.
Oh, the one about
McKinley Park. Into the Wild.
Yeah. Thank you. That actually happened before the incentive program.
Mm-hmm.
That film could have been made in a lot of different places. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think they looked at a lot of northern British Columbia mm-hmm. and other places. But the director believed strongly that it was an Alaskan story and really needed to be told in the places where it happened. So I think, that is becoming altogether too rare.
Mm-hmm.
Directors don't have that power very often anymore.
This is a case where the director had a big name and was able mm-hmm. to swing a certain amount of clout that way, I guess. So, Mary, do you have a thought about what your favorite Alaska film would be? Or?
Well, that is a very good example. Mm-hmm. But like you said, he had the name and the pull mm-hmm. in order to make it happen.
I guess another one would be Grizzly Man, where the person did come north to tell the story because that was where the story did happen and mm-hmm. he came up and
sure.
talked and shot some wonderful mm-hmm. cinematography and used actually a lot of the photography that the victim had used of his own self.
Right.
Exactly.
That was a very high budget for Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, there has been a lot of documentary type material done in Alaska that is very good and very interesting.
Salmon Berries is another feature.
That's right.
Exactly. John Sayles.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned it at her concert.
I was there. Yeah,
funny.
She did.
John Sayles did a movie in
Limbo.
Limbo,
yep.
Then there's the one with Al Pacino where he can't sleep.
It's the Salmon Berries one.
No, that's Insomnia.
Insomnia. Right. That was only just
mostly filmed.
Yeah.
Mostly filmed here.
It's, British Columbia.
No, yeah, mostly not filmed here. I think they did some exteriors in Juneau or something.
It's Christopher Nolan, I think, who just was the director, right? Or was that? I think it.
I don't know right off the top of my head.
I guess I don't either. Christopher, if you're out there, call and let us know if you directed that film. I think that'd be good. If you do want to call him, by the way, the number is 550-8433 in Anchorage and 1-888-353-5752 statewide. If you can type, we can read, email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So what are the main things that hold the entry back up here, you think? What is it that the next thing that we have to get to make a film and she comfortable about shooting here?
I think there's a few things. I think there's, when I talk to producers, the first thing they ask about is our incentive. The second thing they ask about is our crew base. Mm-hmm. And do you have the people I need to make my film? We're developing that crew base. We have a core group of very talented people that are capable of doing amazing things. I think that one plus and minus at the same time that Alaskan crews have is we're all very hands-on and willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. And feature films typically don't work that way.
No, they're jacks of all trade, knives, what is
exactly.
that, the saying, none of which are sharp?
Exactly.
Oh, no, jacks of all trade, master none, I think was that.
Yep.
That's
right
it.
Yep.
That's it.
And feature films are typically more driven towards having very specific job titles and you do one thing. Uh-huh. So we're kind of having to get back past that a little bit. We're trying to get our Alaskan crews to kind of commit a little bit. But we're also trying to train filmmakers that, you know, that Alaskan guy you hire is going to be way more valuable than someone who's from outside.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller here, I think, and this would be Larry. Larry, would you like to tell us what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, first off, I'd like to say that I support the film incentives program. I think it's a good idea, you know, for the film industry and for, you know, the overall Alaskan economy, because anything we can do to get more jobs going here and keeping more dollars here, you know, is good because they circulate and, you know, mm-hmm. they provide jobs for people. But I think I need to, you know, provide a little bit of a cautionary note and a little bit of reality, you know, to the discussion about production companies from Hollywood coming up here and you know, making shows. Thus far, I have not found them, and I've got 35 years experience in the business, and you know, I was involved in making Spirit of the Wind, which was a film about George Atla that was invited to represent the United States at the Cannes Film Festival as an official
documentary,
as a feature film. I also worked as second unit director of photography on John Sayles' Limbo. Mm-hmm. But I find that the companies coming up here from outside today really are not very interested in hiring Alaskan professionals to work for them. You know, they're going to bring with them their key people from California who they've worked with before and whom they know, rather than hiring strangers. They are interested to hire people in ancillary lower down positions, you know, like the young lady who called earlier, who's, you know, just getting her first start in the film business. You know, those are the kinds of people they'll hire to be production assistants. Maybe people to help with casting because they're local, and local people to help with, you know, with some of the logistical kinds of things involved. But, you know, all the key creative positions are going to be people that they bring in from outside, and it's going to be a long time until the outside production companies will hire very many Alaskans to do that kind of thing for them. My observations about the stories that they, you know, produce is that they tend to be somewhat sensationalist or, you know, based on a lower 48 screenwriter's fantasy about Alaska rather than stuff that's really going on here. I mean, you know, the examples you gave of Everybody Likes Whales now, you know, on Frozen Ground.
For Breakfast, I think, is, you know, the other part of it, unspoken part of that title.
Yeah. On Frozen Ground is obviously, you know, a very sensationalist kind of story, and I don't think it's really representative of Alaska. But that's not my business. You know, if the producers want to make those shows, and if they think they can make money on them, you know, more power to them. But we really should look, you know, to them to do anything to help educate people outside about what life in Alaska is really like. For that to happen, we're going to have to nurture Alaska screenwriters, and even more so, we're going to have to find ways that Alaskans can actually produce these films and own these films. And that's really going to be the only way that we're going to develop an infrastructure, because as long as these products are owned by outside corporations, the profits go outside. It's exactly the same story as we had during territorial days with our fisheries and our mines, you know, where the resources were harvested and used and the profits went someplace else. Now the resources that's being used, you know, are the scenery of Alaska and to some extent, you know,
the stories,
accurate or mythological stories about Alaska, but they're being used and exported. Until Alaskans, you know, start producing these shows ourselves and own them and own the profits and then plow those profits back into the industry, you know, we're still going to be behind the ball.
Yep. That's what would you propose to start us in that direction, what would be the first thing that we should do?
Well, I mean, there's really, I mean, you can't force a producer from out of state to hire local people. You can create incentives, you know, through the incentive program. You could offer, you know, points, you know, that would increase their tax benefits if their story was written by an Alaskan, or if they hire Alaskans in key positions like directors and directors of photography. That's been done in other states, mm-hmm. most notably New Mexico, and it's had a very positive effect. You know, but you know, there's no strong arm tactics, you know, that are going to work. Alaskans just have to get more and more experience doing these things, and you know, if Alaskan investors, you know, can be enticed, you know, through the advantages of the incentives program, or any others that anybody can think of, you know, to actually invest money in Alaskan-owned productions, that will be the biggest thing. You know, that will make the biggest difference.
What are the big stories we're missing telling, do you think, up here that we should be looking at that would be appealing to people beyond Alaska?
Well, I think, you know, the reality of what Alaska really is, you know, is far more interesting than these fantasies and these, you know, sensationalized stories. You were talking earlier about, you know, various, you know, eras from Alaska, you know, history, historical, you know, reenactments or feature films based on history are very expensive because of all mm-hmm. the, you know, the props and, you know, things that have to be developed to create the look. But, you know, instead of cowboys and Indians, how about Cossacks and Indians? How about the Battle of Sitka in 1804? There's mm-hmm. a fantastic story there about how the Tlingits first drove the Russians out of Sitka and then how the Russians came back. And, of course, Alexander Baranov was a fascinating character. You know, but there's stories. There are contemporary stories, you know, the Papa Pilgrim and his
adventure. Oh, boy. I met him once, actually.
A little bit sensationalist as well.
Yep.
You know, but you know, there's, you know, as everybody said, there's no shortage of stories in Alaska. Mm-hmm. You know, you could think up 100 cop dramas about state troopers or... Mm-hmm.
My Badge is Frozen would be one, I guess.
I'm sorry?
My Badge is Frozen, I think, is one that leads to mind, perhaps.
Well, and I think, you know, Dana Stabenow held out and didn't sell her Kate Shugak series until she found a production company that would commit to making it in Alaska, and, mm-hmm. and that's Evergreen Films.
Right.
It hasn't been done yet. They're working their way through it. They're building their financing, I'm sure. Projects like that take a long time, years and years. But I think that's your point is well taken. What we need is Alaskans like Dana Stabenow and other Alaskan writers and authors to really hold out and make sure that their stories are told authentically and hopefully by Alaskan filmmakers.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I know it's not your... prerogative, you know, to make changes, you know, in the film incentives law. But you know, when you know, I really would. I've been trying to get people to look at the, you know, the idea of offering extra points, you know, in terms of tax credits for productions, whether they're from Alaska or from outside, that actually employ Alaskans in the key creative positions.
Well, thanks very much. That was quite the inspiring phone call, I think. Did you have thoughts on that, Mary? It seemed like you were nodding your head there at one point. Is there something you had to add? Or?
Well, I do think that it, and we learned this in film school too, it all starts with story. Mm-hmm. And one of my pet projects is to get a writing studio going up here mm-hmm. that is nurturing Alaskans and Alaskan writers. But so far it's fallen on deaf ears. But I'm hoping we're going to find a spot for that. That's my personal passion.
Mm-hmm. Well,
And I think the state is making some progress. The Board of Regents just last year approved a film studies program, a BA in film studies at UAF. It's first right here in at UAA, the communications department is doing some things to enhance their documentary production. So those stories are going to come out, and we're building the infrastructure. And I think the human capital and the physical infrastructure, let's use Hollywood to develop that so locals can use it.
Well, we have another call here. This is Mark. Mark, would you like to tell us what's on your mind?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to chime in and number one, just underscore what your guest was just saying, that we're using Hollywood basically to establish the workforce up here. When Everybody Loves Wales came up, which I was involved with as an actor, there was a lot of a little bit of grousing about inexperienced crews and that kind of thing. But just the process of that film being made brought a lot of people from amateur to working status. Now a year later, with the new film that's going on, there is already a huge difference in the talent pool we've got here in terms of crew, as well as experienced actors that have had some experience in film now and that kind of thing. The other point I wanted to make is just, you know, somebody mentioned about what we're doing is one of the things we're exploiting here is the scenery with our beautiful backdrops to all of these scenes. I just kind of think of this as the ultimate renewable resource, because the more movies we can make that have some of our beautiful scenery in the backdrops, the more that's going to be seen by people in the lower 48 and around the world. That's going to help the tourism industry and have a secondary and tertiary beneficial effect on our economy. So I just, you know, I don't want that to get overlooked. That's also going to be a huge payoff for us down the line, I think, as more and more Alaskan movies are made.
So you think there's a sort of goodwill to be had for Alaska by showing itself to its best advantage? We hope this series of sensationalized murders and people that wander around lost in the backwoods, I guess, is what we're hoping for here.
Even though the Robert Hanson story is a sensational story, it's still going to be set in Alaska with a lot of the Alaskan idiosyncrasies. For instance, all of these remote places that he had to go to via plane. It's another one of those unique things about Alaska. Even though it's a backdrop to this terrible story, it's still going to help show off our state in kind of a strange way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the Timothy Treville movie, Grizzly Man, certainly did that, because the photography was so beautiful, and you just think, wow, if I want to get eaten by a bear, that's where I want to be eaten, because it's very scenic place to go.
It was a tragic story, but it still got to show us off a bit.
Yep.
Well, and I think we're seeing that with the explosion of interest in Alaska in nonfiction television, whether it be Ice Road Truckers, Deadliest Catch, Flying Wild Alaska.
How many ways that are dead in Alaska? I guess that's exactly. As many shows as we got.
But, you know, people are seeing beautiful Alaska scenes on cable television practically any night of the week. Mm-hmm. And that has to be good for Alaska tourism.
Well, yeah, and to be devil's advocate here, green screening has gotten so good now that they could fly in for a few days and get their backdrops. But let's not overlook the beautiful people we have, all the indigenous people and their faces and their stories, which I hope are going to make it to the screen instead of using Mexican and Chinese immigrants in L.A. We're actually going to be using the beautiful faces we have right here in Alaska.
Which you can't green screen.
You cannot green screen.
Could you tell us what green screen is exactly? I don't know. Everybody knows what that is.
It's a compositing method where you can shoot a backdrop and shoot whatever you want to happen in front of that backdrop, and because of 3D dimension now, you can make it look so convincing.
So people could come and steal our scenery, is what you're saying, and take it south, and that'd be the last
of it.
Oh, man.
That's
what they did with the proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
Well, that's one movie I'm scratching off my list, I'll tell you right now. I'm not going to watch that.
You got to watch him go swimming off the boat in Sitka. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it's like, how long before I have 30 sets in, I suppose, Alaskans are wondering when they're watching that.
Well, Alaskans have been kind of ignoring the reality of movies that are set in Alaska since, Northern Exposure. It was good fun as long as you ignored that it was supposed to be Alaska.
Yep. As long as you ignored that there was a bus.
Yep. Well, I guess that answers one question I have, which is what makes Alaska a good place to make movies besides the film and cinema program? What we have, I guess, it's got the people that are unique, and we have the scenery. But
have to drive in awful traffic to get to and from work.
That's true. We have kind of had that issue come up. Well, how long is it going to take me to get to Palmer or Girdwood? And less time than it'll take you to get across the street in Los Angeles.
That's one of the things that I thought from hearing in the movies that everything is 20 minutes from everything else in Los Angeles. I was told, but I don't know. I've only been there like, well, I was born there to tell you the truth, but I've only been there once since. I was flying over, my son looked out the window, he was just appalled.
Yeah,
look at that place down there.
The air is a lot cleaner. And I think, you know, while there are Alaskans who do definitely run up to stars and get autographs, it's mm-hmm. not like mm-hmm. in other places. People are relatively cool about that
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm. Well, the film festival that we have here now, has that done much to energize the local scene, do you think, or is that...
The bigger one?
The AIFF, the Anchorage International Film Festival.
They've brought in people from all over the world, and the quality of the films has been on par with other festivals I've been to around mm-hmm. the world. So I think it's a wonderful thing for us to have that option.
Mm-hmm. So I would second that. They have not focused their attention on Alaska films. I think Alaska films have been welcome. I think as more Alaska films get produced and as more Alaskan filmmakers have a product, I think we will see the Anchorage International Film Festival really start to pay attention. Another great film that we missed talking about is On the Ice, mm-hmm. Which was filmed by Andrew McLean, who grew up in Barrow. Left Alaska to go to film school, mm-hmm. came back, shot a short film that won all kinds of awards at
including,
festivals.
Including, I think, the Golden Usyk, I think, up here in the film festival.
And then he was asked to develop that short film into a full feature. Mm-hmm. It's a great story. I think it's very exciting to see an Alaska filmmaker take advantage of the film incentive program, which that did. Mm-hmm. They've had challenges in their distribution, as Mary was talking about earlier, and have used some of the new tools. They used Kickstarter to mm-hmm. get some funding to be able...
They made their goal, I believe, on Kickstarter.
They did.
Seeded it.
Yeah, they
exactly.
Seeded it. That's one of the things I was going to mention is if you go to Kickstarter, you can probably still give money to that movie if that's something you're interested in doing, because I think Kickstarter will continue to accept money on their behalf. Well, folks, it's been very good to have you on the show. I want to thank you both, Dave Worrell from the State Film Office, and Mary Katsky, local director, producer, media
superstar.
Superstar. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Dave. I knew it was out there somewhere.
Small pool, big fish.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great hour. Thanks to my guests. Coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Shelley Wade for a discussion on prohibition in Alaska. You can join us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Also, make sure to check out our new website, alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today in Hometown Alaska. I'm Peter Dunlap-Scholl.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.